This is Climate One. I'm Greg Dalton.
And I'm Arianna Brocious.
You know, after having conversations about climate for many years, there's one question I get asked a lot, and that is, what else can I do?
Yeah, I get this question too. And I hear this all the time from people I talk to once I tell them what I do for a living. Actually, I get one question first, which is, how screwed are we?
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, I recycle, I try to fly less, what else can I do? What really makes a difference?
And we all know we need to drastically cut the emissions we're putting into the atmosphere. We know what to do, that's simple, but getting there isn't simple or easy. The systemic forces are overwhelming for an individual.
But there are many things we can do to help drive systemic change while walking a bit more lightly on the earth.
Apologies for misleading you. This is not Climate One. This is Climate Conversations. But I enjoy their publications. Welcome to this latest episode of Climate Conversations. I'm your host, Robert McLean. This podcast is assembled here in Shepparton in Northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. Now we have the audio from a story in the Melbourne Age by Laura Chung. And the headline for the story is, What on Earth is Happening to the Weather? These charts help explain.
Global temperature records have again been shattered over recent weeks, troubling climate scientists, whose models are being challenged by the speed at which high temperature marks are set. It looks to me that warming is happening faster than it should be, faster than the models are projecting, said Bill Hare, one of Australia's leading climate scientists. On Sunday last week, 12 of the hottest temperatures recorded on Earth were in Western Australia. A reading of 49.9 degrees was taken at Carnarvon Airport, the eighth hottest temperature ever recorded in Australia. By Wednesday, the hot air mass had crossed the country, accelerating fires in Victoria and storms and floods in New South Wales. 2024 is off to a hot start. Last month was the warmest January on record globally, with surface air temperatures 0.12 degrees warmer than the previous record set in 2020. It comes after 8 months of record-breaking heat. Climatologist and weather historian Maximiliano Herrera, who tracks extreme weather, identified record-high temperatures across the Americas and parts of Asia, with 480 records falling over 3 days in Japan, some by up to 6 degrees. This is the most extreme event in 150 years of Japanese climatic history, he said in a post on X. It is not just the atmosphere that is cooking. Sea surface temperatures have been exceptionally high for this time of year, with the average January temperature this year 0.66 degrees above average, and the second highest ever recorded for all months, just 0.01 degrees below the record, set in August 2023. Some relief might come as the El Niño event, which has driven much of the warm weather, begins to weaken over coming months. While some global weather agencies indicate that La Nina may return this year, it will be some time before they can definitively say. Australia's models don't yet indicate the La Nina. Twitter link. At the bottom of the world. The high temperatures have led to a dramatic loss of sea ice in Antarctica, where record low coverage was recorded last year. While some has bounced back, it remains very low. At the start of this year, there was 6.37 million square kilometers of sea ice. That is the sixth lowest in the satellite record for January 1st. As the summer continued, there was a rapid decline in daily extent led to it ending the month at 2.58 million square kilometers, which is tied second lowest coverage with 2017. According to Hare, the heat records being seen fall only into the worst-case scenario models created by scientists to predict the impact of climate change, and it is not yet clear what is causing the temperature. He believes the El Niño is having marginal impact, and increased moisture thrown in the atmosphere by the Hunga Tonga Hunga Hapai volcano eruption in 2022 may also be contributing. Aside from that, Hare says, it is the world's collective failure to put itself on a pathway to meet Paris climate targets that is the most likely cause. The coming decades will be hotter, but if that pathway is reached fast, temperatures will plateau and then fall. I find it very, very worrying, Hare says.
A professor from the School of Economics at the University of Queensland, John Quiggin, writes on The Conversation, Dutton wants a mature debate about nuclear power. By the time we've had one, new plants will be too late to replace coal. The story begins. If you believe News Poll and the Australian Financial Review, Australia wants to go nuclear, as long as it's small. News poll this week suggests a majority of us are in favour of building small, modular nuclear reactors. A poll of Australian Financial Review readers last year found a similar story. These polls, and a more general question about nuclear power in a Resolve poll for 9 newspapers this week, came after a concerted effort by the Coalition to normalise talking about nuclear power, specifically the small modular kind that's meant to be cheaper and safer. Unfortunately, while small reactors have been around for decades, they are generally costlier than large reactors with a similar design. This reflects the economy of size associated with larger boilers. Now here we have a story from the Washington Post, and it's by Joshua Partlow. The headline for the story is, "These wildfires never went out. They just moved underground." The story begins. Under the ground, even under the snow, zombie fires are burning. The remnants of the most extraordinary wildfire season in recent Canadian history are still smouldering on a scale that experts say is unprecedented. The warm and dry winter, particularly in Western Canada, has left more than 150 fires burning across British Columbia and Alberta, according to the Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Centre. While it's common that such hotspots, known as holdover or zombie fires, can smoke and smoulder through the cold months, this amount of them is not. "We've seen this before, but never at this scale," said Michael Flanagan, a wildfire expert and professor at Thompson Rivers University in British Columbia. "I've been watching fire in Canada and abroad since the late 70s. I've never seen anything like this." And next we have a story from Inside Climate News, and it's by Marianne Lavelle. It has the headline, "South Carolina welcomes multi-billion dollar electric vehicle projects, even though many echo Trump's harsh EV critiques." The story begins and has the dateline, Blythewood, SC. On the way to groundbreaking last week for a massive new electric vehicle plant designed for the rebirth of an iconic American brand, guests first had to walk past the flanks of vintage Scout sport utility vehicles. About a dozen of the pioneering Scouts, all gas and diesel powered, and well over 40 years old, adorned the entrance to the staging area, beside their proud owners, as backhoes and bulldozers worked in the distance. Inside the barn, with the words "Forging the Future" painted on the side, photos of old Scouts lined the walls, while tech-savvy young Volkswagen reps shared tablets offering visitors virtual 3D tours of the scale model display in the centre of the room. "I think I'm pretty good at seeing around corners, but I never saw this coming," said Bill Hartnagel of Lake Lure, North Carolina, standing near his black 1974 Scout, replete with racing stripe and refurbished engine. Out of the clear blue sky, this European company, Volkswagen, saying, "We're going to keep the brand alive." And now we have a story from the New York Times. It has the headline, "Disasters forced 2.5 million Americans from their homes last year." The story begins. An estimated 2.5 million people were forced from their homes in the United States by weather-related disasters in 2023, according to new data from the Census Bureau. The numbers, issued on Thursday, point a more complete picture than ever before of the lives of those people in the aftermath of disasters. More than a third said they experienced at least some food shortage in the first month after being displaced. More than half reported they had interacted with someone who seemed to be trying to defraud them. And more than a third said they had been displaced for longer than a month. The United States experienced 28 disasters last year that each cost at least $1 billion. But until recently, the number of Americans displaced by those disasters had been hard to estimate because of the nation's patchwork response system. Understanding the human toll of disasters, not just the financial costs, is increasingly urgent as climate change supercharges extreme weather, experts say. Nathaniel Melia writes on The Conversation about climate change is fanning the flames of New Zealand's wildfire future. Port Hills is only the beginning. Nathaniel is a senior research fellow at the Victoria University of Wellington. His story begins. Last week, wildfire burned through 650 hectares of forest and scrub in Christchurch, Port Hills. This is not the first time the area is faced with a terrifying wildfire event. The 2017 Port Hills fires burned through almost 2,000 hectares of land, claiming one life and 11 homes. It took 66 days before the fires were fully extinguished. It is clear New Zealand stands at a pivotal juncture. The country faces an increasingly severe wildfire climate, and our once relatively safe regions are now under threat. At all levels of government, the New Zealand needs to consider whether our current investment to combat fires will be enough in the coming decades. Now we shift to an opinion piece from the New York Times, and it's by David Wallace Wells. The headline for his story is, "Just How Many People Will Die from Climate Change?" The story begins, "How deadly could climate change be?" Last fall, in an idiosyncratic corner of the internet where I happened to spend a lot of time, an argument broke out about how to quantify and characterize the mortality impact of global warming. An activist named Roger Hellam, the founder of Extinction Rebellion, who now helps lead the hard-line group Just Stop Oil, told the BBC that if global temperatures reach 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial average, mainly richer humans were responsible for killing roughly 1 billion mainly poorer humans. Hellam was quoting from a somewhat obscure paper published by an engineer and musicologist that focused less on climate impacts than on climate justice. The claim was quickly picked apart by experts. An oft-quoted adage within the climate modeler community is that garbage in equals garbage out. The climate advocate, Mark Linus, wrote, "Getting the science right will strengthen rather than weaken the case for climate activism, both in the public mind and in court." Here we have another opinion piece from the New York Times. It's a guest essay by Nate Lowenthal. And the headline for the story is, "Let's Build a Climate Wall of Shame." The piece begins, "Here is a proposal for the environmental movement. Pool philanthropic funds for a day. Buy a small plot of land in Washington, D.C. and put up a tall marble wall to serve as a climate memorial. Carve on this memorial the names of public figures actively denying the existence of climate change. Carve the names so deep and large, our grandchildren and great-grandchildren need not search the archives." This is not a metaphor. The problem with climate change is the disconnect between action and impact. If politicians vote against construction standards and the school collapses, the next election will be their last. But with climate change, cause and effect are at a vast distance. We're already seeing the consequences of our past and present greenhouse gas emissions. In coming decades, those emissions will wreak their full havoc on the climate, and it will take hundreds, possibly thousands of years for those pollutants to fully dissipate. But in the short term, the most immediate burdens are borne mostly by the poor in America and distant people in distant lands. Misaligned incentives are at the heart of why some political and business leaders deny and delay. Yes, we've reached the end of this episode of Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for your company. It's been great to have you along. Now, my screen is still alive with stories about the climate crisis. Now, some could be a bit dated, but they're still relevant. So I'll put as many as I possibly can in the show notes. So go there, check them out, have a look, see what you enjoy. Now, I'd love to know what people think about this podcast, so you can give me feedback via email at r.mclean7@icloud.com. Now, don't hold back. Good or bad, please let me know. Also, I'd love you to share this with your friends, so put it on your networks, let them know what's happening with the climate crisis, encourage them to read these links and listen to the podcast. Also, I'd love to have your voice on this podcast, so if you want to do that, please contact me at that email address I just gave you and we can organise somehow to contact you. Now, until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind. For everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Now take care and stay safe.